You can tell them in the country, tell them in the town. The miners down in Mingo laid their shovels down. We won't pull another pellet, another ton, or lift another finger till the union we have won. Stand up, boys, let the bosses know. Turn your buckets over, turn your lanterns low. There's fire in our hearts and fire in our soul, but there ain't gonna be no fire in the hole.
This is the Labor Exchange on KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. I'm your host, Robert Lindgren, with the Colorado AFL-CIO and Denver Newspaper Guild. Our guest today is Sheila Ivy Traister with SAG-AFTRA. She's also a vice president of the Colorado AFL-CIO. Welcome to the Labor Exchange.
Thank you. How are you?
I'm doing great. We're going to talk about the upcoming Screen Actors Guild Awards that are happening on February 26th. But first, Sheila, we like to start by getting to know our guests. So can you start by telling me a bit about yourself?
I suppose maybe a good place to start would be specifically related to my union work. I'm a member of SAG-AFTRA, and for those who don't know the acronym, it stands for Screen Actors Guild and the American Federation of Television and Radio Artists. Both unions have been around since, I believe, the 1930s. I became a member of both legacy unions. It was SAG and AFTRA, separate unions, in 1988. And I was able to get my cards for both here in Colorado. We had quite a bit of work here at the time, which was really lovely. Made for TV movies, television series, films. And then I always know the number of years kind of based on the SAG Awards, which I know we're going to talk about, because I became an elected volunteer leader in the fall of the first year that the SAG Awards took place, which I believe was in 1995. So I had, we had both the SAG Council and the AFTRA board. We functioned as a joint board, but I was a member of both separate entities until we merged in 2012. And so I had been a continuous elected leader at that time and served on a multitude of local committees, was very involved in producing the SAG Awards. That was my baby for many years. Also was 8 years a delegate to the AFTRA National Convention before merger. And then when we merged in 2012, I was really honored. I was elected the Colorado local president and national board member at that time. So I was the first person to hold office with the merged union in those positions. And I represented one of 25 locals that we have in the country. Our two largest are Los Angeles and New York. And then we have 23 locals in between, the two major locals of which Colorado is one. And at the time we were Colorado, Nebraska, and Wyoming. And today we're just Colorado and Wyoming. So union service is something that is really meaningful and important to me. And then with my relationship with the AFL-CIO as the liaison from SAG-AFTRA, I was able to get more involved with the labor movement in general, outside of the issues that directly relate to SAG-AFTRA and our membership within the entertainment industry. And it's been a fascinating education. It really speaks to my heart and what's important to me about service to the labor movement.
Yeah, that's really great. And in addition to your service in the labor movement, I want to hear a little bit about just in general, what's it been like to build a life based on creative work, on creation? What's that?
You know, it's a fascinating existence, because you could line up 10 people from our industry and they would all give you a different story. I think for me, I always knew that I wanted to be an artist, to be a performer. I think it started very early in my life. If I could make my mother laugh and my parents roll on the floor, I was a really happy girl. And I was that person that would bust up the family at the dining room table. And then we couldn't even remember why we were laughing anymore. I was often got good grades in school, but it was, you know, she was always cutting up in class and causing trouble in a good way. And I had been an athlete all my life, and my father was in the military, so he traveled every 2.5 years. And my passion for the arts really never got to take hold anywhere. The most consistent thing I had was I started as a dancer at a very early age. And so I thought I was going to be a professional dancer. And then I was able to participate in choirs, sang in a lot of choirs, sang in a couple of bands in high school. And then, but I really wasn't supported. My dad just didn't want me to have what he thought was a very difficult life, that of an entertainer. And so I went a different route, having moved around every 2.5 years of my life. Really, the only life I knew was the military. And so I had spent 5 years in high school in Japan, came back to the States when I graduated, really knew nothing about living in America. So I enlisted in the Air Force and went down that route, hoping to audition for the Tops and Blue Band to be a singer. So somehow to get my, you know, my passion for entertainment there. Oh, and I skipped a step. So outside of dance and singing, because I was an athlete, I never had time for theater. Until I sustained a pretty bad knee injury in my junior year, early in my junior year, a gymnastics injury. And so I ended up doing theater my junior and senior year, which just really confirmed my passion for the art form. I went into the military, that had a circuitous thing. I ended up at the Air Force Academy. And then when I left the military, I went, you know what, I've got to go for this. And I went to Colorado College for a liberal arts degree. And I ended up just pursuing film and television. I won a huge actor search out of like 5,000 people across the country, was flown to LA. And it just all started from there. And there's been lots of fits and starts and bursts. And after 40 years, you always feel like you're still beginning. You reinvent yourself a bazillion times. But I've been very blessed. I've worked with some of the biggest names in the business. I've done film, television, episodic television, commercials, corporate industrial films, voiceover, animation. It's a fascinating life.
Yeah, well, and you had mentioned your father was concerned, you know, of the hard life of an entertainer. Do you think some of the, you know, the fact that you did have to travel every couple of years and knew that, did that, you know, play into you having a willingness or an elasticity to be able to build a career in this field?
You're a fantastic listener, because that's exactly what I've told people, the fact that you picked up on that. I think my military childhood prepared me for this sort of thing about, you know, starts and fits and bursts and having to reinvent yourself every time you move, and you have to find new friends. And as an artist, as an actor in this business, you could have, you know, 5, 10, 20 different employers in any given year.
I want to take a beat and to talk about the 29th annual Screen Actor Guild Awards that are going to be on the Sunday, February the 26th. They're going to air online on Netflix's YouTube account. And then next year they're planning for Netflix to live stream them. I think they're working out some of their own ability to do that. These awards are the youngest of the top tier award shows in the country. Can you tell me how you see the Screen Actor Guild Awards as different from, say, the Oscars?
Sure. So the Oscars have been around for a very long time. And they have the Academy of Motion Pictures Arts and Sciences, and they roughly have, I think, around 10,000 members. And in any given year, anywhere between 8,000 and 9,500 would be eligible to vote. Out of all those voting, they actually have like 17 separate branches within the Academy Awards. And, you know, everything represented from makeup artists to set designers, writers, directors, actors. And so what happens is that all these members of the Academy, when you first begin, you may be a hyphenate, like a director and an actor, but when you first begin there, you can only belong to one branch, I think, and you have to choose what that is. People who've had longevity with the Academy can vote on more. So it's kind of unknown who all these people are and then how they vote, and they have a complicated process and they go through different paring down cycles in the end to come up with their two phases of the nomination cycle and the actual voting, where everybody, you know, would vote depending on their categories. So with the SAG Awards, it's much simpler in that these awards are only for actors, representative of both film and television. And our entire membership that is in good standing, you're current in your dues, you have your SAG-AFTRA card, are able to vote. Now, our nominations, it's randomly chosen. So there's some magical wheel in the sky someplace, and your name is chosen, and you're either given the category of television or film. And, you know, it breaks down into best leading actor, leading actress, best ensemble, best stunt ensemble, best dramatic, best comedic. It breaks down that way. But any member in good standing could be chosen to be one of the nominators, in which case you would be afforded either streaming or DVDs in order to watch the programming. Then you would nominate those that would become part of the final mix, the five or six within each category, that then the entire membership would get to vote on those members again in good standing. And that's one of the big perks, is that like during this month, I have access to streamers and or DVDs for all the nominated categories, projects in those categories. And every year I get to watch them. So even if I don't subscribe to HBO or I don't subscribe to Amazon Prime or Netflix or Disney, I'm going to get those nominated things that I can watch for free so that I can vote. And I have been nominated or selected twice for television and once for film to nominate the actual projects.
Yeah, great. And that sounds like a lot of fun. I'm certainly very jealous as someone who likes obscure movies or even just seeing the newest things too. I wanted to talk about a specific movie about Parasite that won a lot of awards in 2019, a Korean movie. The reason I want to bring it up is the Oscars have been criticized often for a lack of diversity, you know, with folks who win their awards. The Academy Award, you know, Parasite won a lot of the top awards, Best Director, Best Picture, Best Screenplay, Best International Film. But none of the cast were nominated in any of the top actor awards. It's been kind of referred to as the movie that acted itself. The movie won in the SAG Awards, it won outstanding performance by a cast in a motion picture. But again, no one was nominated in any of those top actor categories. Can you react to that criticism that the actors in Parasite were in some ways invisible, I'm saying that, I'm not saying you're saying that, but you know, the film itself was brilliant, was widely recognized. I really enjoyed it. Can you react to that criticism that I've seen around the awards shows?
Yeah, well, as you know, we saw this in a big, big way with the Golden Globes and the boycott that happened last year, and then with the Academy. And it wasn't until I think either 2016 or 2018 that the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences made a commitment to diversify the Academy. And at that time, they brought on some notable performers from the BIPOC community. And, you know, that's going to play out in SAG-AFTRA too. As we become a more diverse and inclusive industry, our membership's going to reflect a more inclusive and diverse industry. I think you're always going to have a little bit of a challenge with foreign films. It's like, I've always loved foreign films. I've always attended film festivals and read subtitles. And most countries do. I find America is far behind. Most of the great films that have come from other countries that have any real mainstay or lifespan within our culture have been dubbed. And I think you lose something when you don't hear the language and you don't hear the inflection of the original artists and you're listening. I have many friends in the industry, and it's something that I love doing is dubbing, but it's not quite the same. So I think you have two things there with foreign language. And secondly, the diversity issue within all our organizations. So culturally needs to get up to speed. I do think too, this is human nature. People like to celebrate their own. You know, there are obviously, you know, different award shows all over the world where in Banff, I'm going to forget the, it starts with a B in Europe. You know, they have their version of the Academy Awards, and you'll see their actors are going to get most of the recognition perhaps. So, but hopefully that will change and that people will recognize work regardless of the language spoken, regardless of, where people are from. If it's a good story and it's well acted, everybody across the board, the directors and the actors, need to be recognized.
Yeah, and I really appreciate your perspective, because I think the criticism was fair, but I even as you were speaking in my head, I was like, yeah, maybe we should, you know, take a pause and celebrate the fact that this brilliant foreign film won the top four awards at the Oscars, you know, and their actors were absolutely recognized through the SAG Awards, and that the fact that that was a well-acted, and you know, somebody watched the movie, it's maybe it's one of my favorites, maybe that's why I'm talking about it, but you know, it was an ensemble, it was like all of the actors were, it's one of those things where they were working in such a way that they complemented each performance together, and so it was appropriate for them to win that ensemble award. I really appreciate your perspective on that.
I would just add to that, Robert, I think people tend to diminish ensemble by thinking, because our culture is very focused on winning. So I remember growing up and with the Olympics, it used to be that all the three medal contenders and winners were equally celebrated in their own right. You saw, and nowadays, if you don't win first place, if you don't win gold, you don't get the endorsements, you don't get, we're obsessed with this winning. And I have to say, as a performer and as a director and a writer, the things I'm most proud of are the ensemble recognition, because what that means is that this story and how it lived on film was made possible by excellence across the board, where no one person necessarily, now sometimes the story, it is a singular individual that drives that story, and so that recognition is deeply warranted. But when you have a story like that, as you mentioned, where it really was dependent how the story moved forward on this collective, that is stunning when a cast is recognized for that level of collaboration, where the director got brilliant performances out of all of them, and you can't separate one from the other. I think that's brilliant.
Yeah, that is. I really appreciate that. The SAG Awards, as I had mentioned earlier, are going to be broadcast on YouTube through Netflix. The SAG-AFTRA in 2019 reached a groundbreaking agreement with Netflix covering programming. The most recent agreement was ratified last year. You touched on the fact that folks, these are ongoing and continue to be negotiated since things change so much. They're, I believe, continuing to negotiate right now. Why are these agreements between SAG-AFTRA and Netflix, why are they important?
So the AMPTP, the American Motion Picture and Television Producers Association, is comprised of, in any given year, between 340 and 380-390 production entities. Most people don't realize that seven production entities pretty much run the entertainment industry, everything from broadcast news to television, film, animation, can all be divided up into seven major companies. Netflix, up until this coming year, they were new. They are unique in that they are a production entity, a distribution entity. You know, we're seeing that now. That's new to our industry, whereas before distribution was often separate from the major entities. And so our arrangement with Netflix was separate from the AMPTP. They had, with their streaming service and their global reach, we were able to negotiate with them separately. And now they're moving into part of that fold because there are benefits for everybody in that. The importance of our ability to negotiate with any employer is to ensure some really key fundamental things that are the most important for all our contract negotiations. One, safety on the set. If you go through our Bibles that are our contracts, you will find that almost everything has to do with safety on a set. If you work a crew or actors too long, long days repeatedly, they're going to get tired. They're going to make mistakes. That's when people get hurt. That's when people get sick. We want to make sure that they are paid fairly for the work that they do, that they have a fair piece of the pie when it comes to the earnings that the producers are making for what we do. And just to put that in perspective, a producer sits behind a desk. If they produce 50 projects in the course of the year, it doesn't affect their ability to work. An actor in a TV show, and we go back, we look at something like Gilligan's Island from a long time ago. That show, as successful as it is, and it's still known today, killed some of the careers for those people. They were never seen after that as other than Ginger, as other than Marianne. It's unique that, for example, the cast of Friends, most of them have gone on to be able to have film careers and additional television careers. Many people get branded by their characters and can't do other work. So for an actor, when people say, hey, you guys make so much money, how many people get pigeonholed as a comedic actor or a dramatic actor and they can't break out of that? Or they do film or a television and they can't be seen in film, or particularly for women for a long time who are seen in a particular light and then not able to break out of that. So our contracts go far beyond fair wages and practices and safety to try to make sure that we can have a sustainable career when you look at the kind of limitations that are placed on us. And then you have to deal with ageism. I booked 13 out of 19 or 20 auditions in New Mexico when they first, you know, came around, and then I had developed severe allergies, couldn't dye my hair anymore. And this is, you know, I'm naturally platinum now. Haven't gotten a single job in New Mexico, even though my face looks the same, since I put myself on the website with platinum colored hair. Puts me in a different age demographic where men can be gray. So now I'm looking at shooting headshots and stuff with darker haired wigs so I can go back and still play or be seen in certain roles. There's so much to consider about who we are on screen that allows us to work and what restricts us from that work. So our contracts have to deal with all of that: ageism, ethnicity, gender, fair representation of us on screen and in the stories.
Yeah, yeah. And we brought up a few great points that different levels entertainers need in order to build a sustainable career. I did want to ask you on Netflix. The SAG Awards, they're not going to be on network TV. They're going to be streamed on YouTube. And then next year, they're planning to have it be on Netflix itself. What does that change mean for the awards, for who gets to see them, for what they mean, you know, the world? What do you think that sort of change means?
Yeah, I mean, for Netflix, it'll be the first award show that they've done and that they will do live next year, which is exciting. And, you know, with the change in technology again, and Netflix has global reach, people all over the world will watch Netflix, can stream Netflix. There might be a few places where there are some restrictions, but it will, I think, make the award show available on people's iPhones and on their iPads and their laptops and their desktops. And we have entire generations of people who don't sit in front of a TV screen anymore. You know, they get their TV on the way into work, riding on mass transit with their earplugs and that. So I think we're going to see perhaps, I would hope generationally, a broader birth of people coming to the award show because of the accessibility for it to be streamed in that way. I think we may lose some people. We've got some people who still, particularly maybe in an older demographic, who pretty much don't pay for cable and only have network television, that may miss out on this. But I would think that most, that may apply more to the Academy Awards than the SAG Awards. I think the SAG Awards community is probably generationally a little more hip, a little more up on technology. You know, here's the big thing about the SAG Awards. It's really charming when you look at people who attend the SAG Awards versus the Academy Awards. They're really happy. They're hanging out with their peers. And you'll hear in their acceptance speeches how much this means to them because they were nominated by their peers. Tom Hanks' vote means no more than my vote, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
We're all part of that one branch that are the membership of SAG-AFTRA. And so they know that. And it's all their peers who perform on camera and behind the mic that are voting for them. So it's really charming, and you're going to see a lot of huge generations represented in the SAG Awards as a result of that. You're going to see a lot more diversity within the SAG Awards as a result of that. So I think globally, it's exciting for us. And what a lot of people don't know, the SAG Awards is a fundraiser for the SAG-AFTRA Foundation. And they provide education and resources and community support, like during COVID or during major catastrophes. The SAG-AFTRA Foundation, which is separate from SAG-AFTRA, is funded by this award show. So that's huge. That goes back to taking care of our members.
Yeah, and I feel like that's a great spot to end our conversation today. Thank you so much for being on the show and explaining some of the background on being in a creative field and the SAG-AFTRA Awards.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. I'm so excited that you asked.
Yeah, thank you so much. This has been The Labor Exchange on KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. I'm your host, Robert Lindgren, with the Colorado AFL-CIO and Denver Newspaper Guild. Our guest today has been Sheila Ivy Tracer with SAG-AFTRA. The Labor Exchange is a member of the Labor Radio Podcast Network. Find more great Labor Radio on laborradionetwork.org. Join us next week at the same time for La Lucha Sigue. The 29th Annual Screen Actor Guild Awards air Sunday, February 26th at 8 p.m. Eastern on the Netflix YouTube channel.